We have a few questions for the people who made Karate Robo Zaborgar.
Okay, so were you guys breastfed for too long? Or maybe not long enough? Because man, have you got some issues with women.
Is Diarrhea Robot a mistranslation of Dung Beetle?
Have you guys sought professional help?
Clean and simple. When you watch Kamen Rider, do you suppress the urge to scream like the Joker did to Batman? You made me! Those questions and many more may or may not be answered in this episode of Mighty Movies Temple of Bad. Temple of Bad, a show where we talk about movies so awful they're practically a religious experience. I'm Dan Persons.
I'm Andrea Lipinski.
I'm Kevin Lauderdale.
And I'm the Blue Power Ranger, Orenthal Hawkins.
And remember that all the films we discuss on TOB are available on Netflix to watch, and we suggest you do because really, Justin Bieber can't do it all on his own. This time around, we are talking about an epic of tokusatsu, that classic Japanese robot clashing genre. This is called Karate Robo Zaborgar. It's directed by Noboru Iguchi, the man who's responsible for such classics as Machine Girl, the F is for Fart segment from the ABCs of Death, and also the classic zombie-ass Toilet of the Dead. Yes, it's a real film. And this was Orenthal Hawkins' inaugural submission to the Temple of Bad. So Hawk, you've got a lot to answer for. Explain yourself. Why this one?
Honestly, I read about this in a Cracked article. Thank you, Cracked.com. And I said, oh my God, I have to see this. And then after I saw it, I said, oh my God, why did I have to see this? But I did learn something about it. This version is based on an old 1970s. It's an updating and rebooting of a 1970s version of the same story. We've gone into the future. The future doesn't look much different than 1970s vision of the future.
Okay, and so you can get some sort of idea what the film is like. We'll play a little bit of the trailer now, because it is a Japanese film. The trailer is in Japanese, so you're not going to really understand much of it. But we'll just play a chunk of it, so you get some sort of idea of what's going on. Here we go. Okay, so here's the story. Yutaka Daimon is a member of the secret police. You can tell it's the secret police because he continually tells anybody within earshot about it. He's charged with defending the Earth, by which we mean Japan, which is fair. I mean, you know, Bruce Willis has defended the Earth as well, by which we mean New Jersey. So, you know, it's fair enough that they get sort of provincial about that sort of stuff. In any case, Yutaka does this with a magnificent motorcycle / robot called Zaborgar, which houses the consciousness of his brother. There's a story there, not that it makes much sense. It also has a built-in stereo system and can launch a helicopter from its head and twin cars from its feet that can join up to form one car, because that's practical. In any case, his big battle is with the evil organization Sigma and Dr. Akuno Miya, who's trying to steal the DNA from Japan's top politicians who collectively make the Tea Party look like the First Congress. And he's doing that to power or flesh out or something his giant world-conquering robot. He does this with the help of Miss Borg, a reincarnated, scorned woman with a detachable head and a really annoying laugh. So, can Yutaka Daimon defeat this evil organization? No. No, it turns out. And at the halfway point, he's hooked up with Miss Borg, betrayed the secret police, and witnessed the destruction of Zaborgar. 25 years later, we rejoin the story. Yutaka is now a chauffeur. His colleagues on the secret police are living hand-to-mouth, and Sigma is almost finished with their giant robot. And, you know, it's nice to see an evil organization that's willing to play the long game. That's just so rare these days. So we pick up the story again. Zaborgar is restored. Yutaka teams up with the daughter spawned of his liaison with Miss Borg. And the battle is on again. And just to reassure everybody, yes, Tokyo does come under assault of a giant robot. You know, how could they not do that? Okay, so Hawk. Okay, let me not mince words about this. I actually liked this, and it's weird, you know, because halfway through the thing, I was ready to kill you. You know, I don't know. Well, you probably do remember there was a Simpsons episode where they did what they called a bunch of Simpsons spinoffs, a number of shows that you know, spun off ancillary characters into other shows and stuff like that. And the last segment of that was a variety show starring the Simpsons, and it was actually a takeoff of a show that they did with the characters from the Brady Bunch. That was a real thing that was actually on TV. And the problem with that was that it was a satire, but it was just too accurate and just too good. And one of the things that sort of struck me about the first half of the film, which is the part leading up to Yutaka's defeat, is that it just played too accurately to what an actual tokusatsu show might be. And so the effects are goosed up to a certain extent, and there's a lot of additional raunchy humor that is incorporated into it. But I'm sort of like going, you know, why am I here? You know, it's just sort of belaboring the point. The thing is, though, is that at that point, Yutaka gets defeated, and then we go 25 years into the future. And when they put up that card 25 years later, I went, oh, now I get it. And, you know, flashing forward 25 years and seeing Yutaka being played now by an older actor, and it provided an interesting context to, you know, what we think of with these sort of campy Japanese superhero or super robot type shows. You know, you never think about what happens 25 years past the events we're seeing, and quite frankly, you know, I've tried to watch other stuff by Noboru Iguchi, and my experience there, I haven't gotten too far into his other films, because basically my sense of his other films, I've watched them and I get a half hour in and I go, oh, I get it, and shut off the film after that. So I haven't delved much in. I don't know if he pulls the same trick in those films that he does in this film. You know, you did mention that this was based on an actual 70s show, and I think that may have had some sort of effect on him. For one thing, this is the mildest Iguchi film that I've seen. There's not really a lot of explicit gore. The raunchiness is actually rather mild in comparison to some of the other stuff he's done. And so, you know, in lieu of that, in lieu of what he tends to fall upon rather easily, which is sort of belaboring, a somewhat sophomoric point, he's forced to rely on something else, and he actually comes up with a clever conceit in breaking the story into two halves. And actually having the future portion sort of serve as a commentary on all the cliches of the actual TV show. So you know what? I actually really did like this film. It falls in very much with other such satires. Like Big Man Japan and Zebra Man. And so, you know, it works in the context of what I understand about Japanese satire. You know, if you've watched any of Space Dandy on Adult Swim, it's very much of a piece with that kind of humor. And yeah, it's silly, but it also struck me as rather clever. So, you know, the purpose of this show is to rag on bad films, and I'm sort of at a loss here. So what I am going to do, I think, is I'm going to take a little bit of a step back and let you guys go at it. And, you know, I'm here and I'm participating, but it's going to be more your show because, quite frankly, I enjoyed this thing. Hawk, how about you?
Well, I'm actually glad you brought up Space Dandy because it's a perfect example of a point I wanted to make. Space Dandy is a great satire because it's very self-contained, which you know what it's making fun of, and it hits all the right points. It's enough of a space opera show to make you go, hey, look at this. This is space opera, but then it's funny enough, and it hits all the stereotypes of Japanese space opera, you know, pointedly, that, you know, it's obvious that it doesn't take itself seriously, and it's beautiful in that respect. What we have here with this movie is a tale of two movies. And the first part, that they're both parodies, but the first half is movie 43, and the second half is Airplane. So one, abysmal, and the other half, not so abysmal, because the first half is over the top, but it is over the top in such a way that the 70s show was exactly over the top. It's not really making fun of anything. And the second half is a complete deconstruction of the entire genre. The problem is when you make them one movie, it's like having a warm front and a cold front meeting each other. You get a superstore, and that's exactly what happens. And it's a superstore. It's a mess. I found myself liking the second half. Now I'm not, you know, dancing around, but I can tolerate the second half. But the taste in my mouth from the first half was really, well, I can still take it as a matter of fact. So, yeah. So, I mean, to give you an idea of the first half, just to give you an idea. One of the first scenes, everyone gets beat up by a woman's flying head. And then there's a point where the giant robot cyborg samurai villain that you first met, he displays a pair of giant lips, which he uses to suck on the faces of ministers, and their faces collapse, And he, in the process, he's sucking out their DNA. I don't know what kind of subtext is supposed to be there, but it's really scary. And at one point, there's a whole subplot where our hero's father indicates that he raised his sons on man breast milk. And so while it made efforts to actually, it was so over the top, and it tried to actually, you know, parody the aspects of the 70s show, it was either just so really ridiculous, like with the man breast milk, or just so actually accurate that words fail me. I have none in brain, can't put together two. So, yeah.
You see, if it was only the first half of the film, I would be right with you there. But the fact that there is that second half that puts the first half in context redeems it for me. And I am looking at the thing as a whole. You know, if you break it into the two parts, yeah, then there's problems with the first half. But I think, you know, once you get the context, it actually works. Andrea, how about you? How did it work for you?
Uh-oh. You sure you want to go to me?
Yeah, yes, I do. Should I put on my iron underwear here?
Duck. Okay, well, first off, I do highly recommend the article that Hawk found in crack.com that made us aware of this movie. If you Google the craziest karate robot motorcycle movie ever made, you will find the article from crack.com that came out in September of 2013, and you should read that article. And then you look, and it has different, you know, pictures and little animations and stuff, so you sort of get a gist of how wacky this film is. Look, I'm pretty sure that I've had fever dreams that were more coherent than this film. I think a big part of the problem is I'm not the right demographic for this film. I think if I was a boy who grew up with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, or I was a man and I grew up with Jet Jaguar, and that was like my thing, then I would be more into this. But it was just kind of, you know, sort of, you know, wacky, crazy, campy, wacky, crazy, campy, wacky, crazy, campy. Boobs. What? Wait, what just happened? Did she just, what just came out of, oh my God. So I found it very overwhelming. Now, I mean, I watch it by myself and I'm like, okay, maybe it's just me that I think, you know, whoever wrote this had some issues with women and maybe had some very long therapy sessions discussing his feelings about his mother. But to be fair, the second time I watched the movie, my boyfriend was in the room with me and he was also completely bewildered. And by the way, Hawk, I told him that you picked this film and he wants to have a word with you the next time he sees it.
What did you do to my woman?
Yeah, he speaks like that, Dan, like a Neanderthal. Thank you. But anyway, you know, it was just too, I don't know. I enjoy over the top, but I was like, what the hell is going on here? And then every time I thought, okay, this is like the weirdest film I've seen, then something weirder would happen. And I'd be like, what? And I was very, very bewildered. Dan, I found it interesting when you said that you would watch sort of other films and kind of given up after half an hour. Mm-hmm. And like, I kind of felt that way mentally. And yeah. So by the time we get to the second half of the movie, when it's boom, 25 years later, suddenly it's a different actor. Suddenly the mood is different. I was tired. I was tired and I was wrung out from the first half of the movie. So I was already like losing consciousness during the second half. So the second half wasn't enough to redeem the fact that I felt like I'd been run over by a steamroller after the first half. And so I understood that there was this big shift, but I was literally emotionally, spiritually tired by the time I got to the second half. And it wasn't enough to repair it for me. And I saw it was going in a different direction and I saw it was sort of a different movie, but I was like, I'm so exhausted. just from the last half hour, 40 minutes, I mean, I literally started like tuning out during the end of it. And I was getting too tired to like, you know, to keep up with all the subtitles. And it's like, oh, okay, more fighting, more screaming, more people yelling and running at each other. And by the way, what was all the stuff with all the boobs? Yeah. I mean, I just figure
about the politicians or the...
you know, the fact... I think the fact that I have ovaries is the problem. And the fact that my ovaries aren't shooting out weapons of mass destruction or comets or dinosaurs or tentacles or whatever the hell else means that I am not really in the right mindset as the right audience for this film.
We got to come back to that. By the way, full disclosure, I watched this film in two parts.
Aha.
I broke it at the eye catch, which was that little title card that they had between the two halves. I actually stopped there and picked it up the day following. So that may have helped. Yeah. Kevin, how about you? Too much? Just enough?
I went through, I went through a series of thoughts as I was watching this. First of all, full disclosure, there are no naked breasts in this movie. They are all mechanical and frequently on mechanical devices, you know, like motorcycles, things like that, as will happen. I went into this movie totally cold. I had no idea what this was. Hawk sent us a title. I just copied it, pasted it, started watching it. And I'd watched a couple of things like this when I was a kid. I grew up on Johnny Sacco and his Flying Robot. And when I was in college, I watched Dynaman, which was, I assume, a 70s show with, you know, like this, only dubbed with comedic effect, so that the evil supervillain is kidnapping brides by singing his Paul McCartney medley, things like that. So the first thing I saw was, okay, I think this is a sort of Austin Powers-level parody of that sort of thing. And now hearing you guys talk about that, I'm getting that that's what it was. We had said briefly that at the very end during the credits, there are clips from the original show from the 70s or 80s. I want to recommend anybody who watches this go straight to the end credits. Watch those clips and then go back and watch this show so you can see what's been souped up, what's been sexed up. I got a whole new level of appreciation after watching this movie by watching those clips and going, oh, that's what this is. This is a remake. This is a souping up. When I was done, I thought to myself, oh, my God, what if the first Star Trek movie had done this? What if the first half of the movie had been a remake of Space Seed and the second half was a shortened version of Wrath of Khan? I think that I have to agree with you guys. Breaking this up into two parts and having that narrative jump blew me away. Nobody in Hollywood would do that today. That is a really daring move, and it allowed for all kinds of flexibility and strangeness. This isn't a bad movie. It's beautifully shot. It looks gorgeous, but it is a crazy movie. There's no two ways about that.
It might be the most insane thing I ever watched.
By the way, Kevin, you know, if they have truck nuts, why not motorcycle tits?
One of the motorcycles wearing a thong panty?
Yeah.
Oh, you have to ask.
I wasn't sure.
Yes.
I'm just confirming that.
Yes, the lady one. Let's not get out of control here. It was the lady motorcycle robot thing.
Not since Howard the Duck, where the lady duck had breasts, have I been so confused. Motorcycles.
Right. Okay, anytime that you are discussing a movie and you have to use the phrase, not since Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
That is not a ringing endorsement.
That's a blurb right there. Hawk, you actually have seen some of the original episodes, haven't you?
I've seen bits and pieces on YouTube. Let me just share something with you. Less about the original episodes, more about what's happening.
Hawk, get a little closer to the microphone. You're sort of resonating a little too much there.
Might be because I actually have two close to the Oklahoma. Let me share something with you about less about the 70s show, and more about the simple fact that this is, we've said that this is two movies, but there's a complete tonal shift between the halves. One is, you know, super parody, and the other is parody. And if you watch them together, it's almost like driving a car really, really fast and then hitting the brakes really, really hard. it just takes you out of your, it really takes you out of your game. So, the original, from what I've seen, is basically like every other one of these series, like the Japanese Spider-Man and so on and so forth, you know, fight minor villains, meet the major villain, a period of talking and figuring out the major villain's plan and trying to stop his plan, and then another battle with the major villain. I don't think that there's any giant robotness in this, so nothing grows and no one has to fight him like in the case of, because I think if you think about the old Japanese Spider-Man, you know, Spider-Man had a giant robot. But of course, that is nowhere near as insane as anything in this movie. And to give you an idea of the insanity, and I know you didn't want to go there, and I know you didn't lead me here, but I have to say this. Miss Borg and Diamond have the weirdest romance ever. At one point, I took notes because I had to really just break this down, their entire romance. Okay. First of all, at one point, she's freaked out that his bike has a face. But her head flew around without a body, and she's fine without that. So, let's see. At one point, they're chasing each other on their bikes, and she's mad at him because he was kind to her. So kindness is a problem for her. Yet, he can't hit her because she's a woman, but she's firing boob missiles at him. And at one point, she stabs him in the head. And somehow, during that fight, they accidentally kiss. Then she runs away, and he chases her. They have this long discussion during the chase, which is really not a chase. They're pretty much like parallel to each other. And they have this discussion on their bikes, and then they kiss some more. And then finally, they have this long, drawn-out speech where they have cyborg sex, which leads to cyborg sex, which is just the weirdest thing I have ever seen, and pretty much, I think, may have made me revert back to virginity.
It's Japanese. You gotta have tentacle porn. even Kurosawa's Ron has tentacle porn.
They're the first tentacles, admittedly, that I've seen emerging from someone's boobs, though.
Yes, I've never seen tentacle porn where the recipient of the tentacles is a guy. That's generally not how hentai works.
Another reason this is so innovative.
Another reason that guy needs therapy.
And to point the cyborgs, he's getting slapped around with her metallic tentacles from, I don't know where they came out of her body, because not all of them came out of her boobs. And he's getting slapped around with this, and he's going, oh, this is great. I'm like, no, that's not great. That's the complete opposite of great.
You know, Andrea, you had expressed some feelings about Miss Borg and her psychological motivations. Let me just say, first off, that the fact that the film gives Miss Borg some psychological motivations, it's pretty much established that she had committed suicide when either her lover or her husband had spurned her or cheated on her, and the bad guy reanimated her. after that. And it goes, for one thing, it is very much of a part with Japanese storytelling, even storytelling aimed at teenagers and kids, that the bad guys are given some sort of some sort of motivation that can provide some empathy to why they are doing what they are doing. But at the same time, you also get the feeling that it's also sending up that trope as well. But I know you wanted to talk a bit about Miss Borg's motivations, didn't you?
Sure. Well, look, I mean, Miss Borg could use some therapy, too. I mean, they shouldn't all be having group therapy together. I mean, half the characters in this movie need to individually see therapists and work out their frigging issues. I mean, you know, there's, you know, you as the audience are built in to empathize with her to some extent because she has like those built-in tears on her face. You know, that, or it's something that looks like they could be tears, you know, metallic tears down her face. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I basically spent, you know, the movie questioning kind of everybody's motivations and, you know, you're kind of empathizing with different people and you're empathizing with, you know, our hero and his, 70s hair flowing in the breeze. You're empathizing her with the tears on her face, but you know, there's so much, you know, and I understand that it's supposed to be over the top. I understand that. But then there's over the top, and then there's so far over the top that I don't remember where the top was anymore. And when Diamond is talking to his brother slash robot slash motorcycle,
mm-hmm.
you don't get to hear that too often, and saying, hit me, I need to feel the blood bond. And so the two of them are hitting each other. Over and over and over and over again. Okay. Earlier this week, as part of a Razzie project, I watched movie 43. Number
I'm
one,
sorry.
Don't see movie 43. I cannot recommend it to anyone at all.
It's on Netflix, people.
Yes, I know. That's how I saw it. That is the only redeeming thing. I did not pay any extra money to see it. It's horrible, but it's the same thing. It's like, oh yeah, it's over the top. No, we're so far over the top that you're like, what the hell happened? We are so far. I don't know. Like, you know, like I said, all of this wackiness with Miss Borg and, you know, with the other characters, you know, was happening in the first half of the movie. So by the time we get to the second half, where some of the characters have grown and aged and matured and settled down, like I said, I was so wiped out from the first half, it was hard for me to, you know, reverse my brain and get into that mindset and get into the deconstructing part of the film. The first half of this movie just exhausted me. And look, I understand, you know, I mean, I read that article in crack.com and it lived up to that. It was a crazy karate robot motorcycle movie. I'm totally there. But then there was just all this weird tawdry stuff with tentacles and people hitting each other. And I was like, what am I watching? What the hell is happening here?
Hey, the second half, somebody stops fighting. Diamond actually stops fighting or loses a fight. And he's lying there on the ground saying, and asking for mercy because he has diabetes, which I thought was actually funny. I actually thought that was funny. I'm middle-aged. I have diabetes. Don't hit me. You know?
By the way, I want to take a tangent here because I wanted to bring up one of the weirder elements in the first part of the film, which is the way that Daimon finds out. I believe this is the point in the film. It's sort of been a while since I've watched the film, actually, but it's the point where Daimon finds out about Zaborgar, and the way he finds out about it is that there's a movie projector that's running. His father has committed suicide. Rather than give the bad guys the secret to Daimonium, is it?
Yes.
Daimonium, which is this miracle element that can turn anything into a robot. Wrap your mind around that. But his father has committed suicide, and Daimon goes into the laboratory. There's a movie projector running, and there's a film of his father telling him about Zaborgar. And the thing about that is that Daimon talks to his father in the movie, and his father answers back. And what caught my attention about that was that I watched that and I went, where have I seen that before? And it turns out that they pulled the same gag in the Adult Swim show The Heart She Hollers, where Patton Oswalt plays the son of the dead mayor. He's got a room full of videotapes, all of which are themed to various questions that he might have. He pops the tape in, his father shows up, and they have a conversation. It's the exact same thing. The fact is that The Heart She Hollers was done in 2013. Karate Robo Zaborgar was done in 2011. And I don't think it is too inconceivable that the producers of The Heart She Holler saw Karate Robo Zaborgar and said, that's a neat idea. Let's do that.
It's older. I've seen it in other things.
In Doctor Who. Was it in Blink?
Oh, it was in Blink. That's true.
That's 2007?
Yeah.
But I'd be willing to bet it must exist in cartoons earlier than that. I bet you there's one. But at the very least, it's pulled from Doctor
Who. In cartoons, it has been done, but usually it's done in a way that suggests that... It's a conceptual difference. In cartoons, it's usually done in a way that suggests that the film that's running on the screen and whatever sort of quote-unquote reality is going in front of the screen are all running at the same time. With Karate Robo Zaborgar and The Heart She Hollers, the suggestion is that the tapes were recorded previously. It's not... The reality on the tape is not happening concurrently with the reality in front of the screen.
Right. Same with Doctor Who. Okay.
Yeah. That's the major difference. So, that just struck me as a weird thing. You know, Kevin, you did bring up the production here, and I did note that as well. This is actually, I forget where I read it in Wikipedia or something, but this is actually Gucci's most elaborate production, and clearly, you know, it was because this thing was owned by somebody else, and they licensed it out. And it's just weird that Gucci, of all people, is handling a licensed property in this particular. Licensed property. It's just kind of bizarre, but clearly because it is a licensed property, there was more production to it. And so I wouldn't say the CG effects are convincing, but they are ambitious in their own way. And given the whole nature of the film, they do work in context. I mean, Hawk, how did those work for you?
What I loved about the special effects, I actually did like them because they were a modern version with a 70s sensibility. They didn't remove the 70s sensibility. What they did was they did what they would have done in the 70s if they had the budget and the technology. So they didn't strip that away. So I actually kind of liked that aspect of it. That being said, what they did with it freaked me the hell out. Diarrhea monster.
Use the full name, Hawk.
What?
Acid-spewing diarrhea monster.
Oh, God, I had forgotten about that. I just ended up calling him diarrhea monster for sure.
Well, when it introduces itself, or whatever, it does just say diarrhea monster. We learn about the acid spewing part later.
Yes, as it's about to melt, our robot friend, like, oh no, he's going to melt. And he's giving him commands to prevent it from melting. And I just, wow, that's, I don't know. The giant truck, I can't remember what the name of it, the giant living truck that eats the prime minister. the minister's wife.
I think it's called Bulldog Truck. I think that's all that it's called.
And I'm like, what? Say what now? You know, and it's just, you know, what's funny is there's none of that in the second half except for the fact that Diamond and Miss Borg had a daughter. And at one point, she becomes essentially the giant robot. She finishes up Sigma's giant robot, and it takes her form. And so she's a giant robot. And that's not what I think they were doing in the second half of the film, if you look at the special effects, is that they treated it now like it was a modern – the special effects were much more modern in the second half. So they're trying to ape the 70s in the first half, and then 25 years later, they're trying to do more modern special effects. I almost felt like when they say 25 years later, it almost feels like the first half of the film takes place, well, kind of like in the 80s, and the second half of the film is supposed to be like the early 2000s or something to that effect.
Yeah. Let me clarify for the audience that it's a truck with the head of a bulldog and arms.
And it's called Bulldog Car Robot.
There you go.
Because, you know, like you do.
Yeah, that's what I would call my bulldog-shaped car robot if I had no sense or originality or anything like that. But I digress. I do have to say, again, the second half of the film is much better. That being said, if you watch them together, it's still a confusing mess.
Well, maybe everybody should do what Dan did and watch the first half, take a break. Come back the next day, and then watch the second half so that your mind isn't spinning from that first half anymore, and then you'll be able to appreciate the deconstructive nuances. Rather than losing consciousness, flipping out, which is kind of what was happening to me during the second half.
Andrea, was there anything in the production values that you could appreciate at least?
All right. Well, look, I mean, there was, you know, it.
Okay, moving on.
When I did get to the end of the film and they showed the clips during the closing credits of the original series, I kind of wished I'd seen that instead. I think I liked the older, campier kind of, you know, stuff. I mean, I don't know. There's something in me that does appreciate, you know, sort of older, campier stuff. I mean, look, if I have to pick a bad movie, I never really look at modern bad movies. And we will soon hear about one of my favorites that we will be watching soon. You know, I prefer old retro stuff. I mean, I think I might have preferred either watching the original series or watching a movie made more in the vein of the original series. I don't know. I'm guessing there wasn't quite as much boob action in the original series. So that dialing back on that would have been good for me.
Kevin, is there anything further you want to say about the production?
I thought it was beautiful. That was shiny and bright. I'm easily impressed by bright colors. It was like a candy of that kind of thing. It was like
Kevin, you know, if I ever want to distract you, I know just to bring out a set of keys.
There you go.
Kevin is fascinated by small, shiny objects.
It's like those Apple iMacs that came in purple and pink and blue. I'll tell you something that interested me. I'm trying to figure out if this is just a function of this movie or if it tells us a lot more about the national characteristics of Japan or something. Is the emphasis on characters wanting to be destroyed before they became harmful? The giant mecha schoolgirl, I guess, that Daimon's daughter becomes, is having a lot of difficulties controlling herself from turning into an evil, destructive robot. And when she more or less involuntarily becomes the giant monster, the giant robot, she fights against herself from destroying Tokyo, but she gives into it and it's so hard. I mean, do we know?
It ties a lot into the Japanese sense of honor. for one thing. It also ties into the fact that the Japanese are more of a consensus type of society. There's a much more of an impulse to conform, to go along with the crowd rather than stand out. And so for the sake of the whole, for the sake of the greater good, and for the sense of honor, somebody would fight, against turning evil.
Well, it also goes to the concept that's used in Japanese pro wrestling. I'm going to actually extend my little pop culture Japanese knowledge here. In Japanese pro wrestling, as opposed to American pro wrestling, focuses on a lot of building someone up, building up a character. It's very character driven.
And then hitting him with a folding chair.
Japanese pro wrestling is based upon the concept of fighting spirit. So you can lose as long as you give it a shot, as long as you fight. Now you combine that with the concept of fighting spirit with from a religious standpoint, Shinto is the main religion in Japan, and the idea behind Shinto is that everything has a spirit. You get the idea of why robots are often in Japanese shows and movies. They often get their own will and make their own decisions. As a matter of fact, one of the final things in Johnny Sato and his flying robot is that giant robot takes actions on his own. Because, again, that goes back to the concept of everything having a spirit. So all of that stuff is on display in this movie. Every little aspect of it. And because there's so much of it, it's a mess. It's a hot mess.
It's a hot, tentacled mess.
Okay, so, I actually participated more than I was intending to, but I'm sort of out of my notes here. Is there anything anybody else wants to talk about with the film?
I think we need to get to the things that we learned.
Okay, so let's move on then, and let's talk about what we learned from this movie. So, Andrea, we'll start with you. What did you learn from Karate Robo Zborgar?
Attacks are made much more special if they have fancy names.
Kevin?
When building a giant robot, you can't just use DNA from anybody. You got to use it from an easily corrupted official.
Hawk?
I never want to have cyborg sex.
Okay, and following up on that, sex with a cyborg means contending with prehensile tits.
Ugh.
Andrea?
Yes, there is such a thing as a diarrhea monster.
In Japan, even the motorcycles wear thong panties.
If you're a politician and your wife is a Miss Universe contestant and is a graduate student and is brilliant and beautiful, make sure to throw her in front of the large vehicle that's trying to eat you rather than protecting her.
Men lactate easily.
Ew. Well, speaking of gross, you can suck DNA out of someone's head with a giant set of pig lips.
Andrew wins the internet today.
Japanese women's bras are so much more interesting than those in America.
You can get beaten up by a flying head.
All politicians are greedy, oversexed, craven cowards who'd sacrifice a 6-year-old child to save their own skins. Actually, I knew that before, but it's worth repeating.
Well, we have touched on this earlier, but I have one more thing that I learned, which is sex with a cyborg is a lot stranger than you might have imagined.
All right, here's my last one. Even though Japan exports sophisticated microtechnology communications devices to the West, they themselves all rely on handlebar-sized microphones.
My last one. Oh, The hero wants revenge. That's new.
Nice.
It only makes sense to design an emasculating, DNA-sucking, big-lipped robot with samurai armor.
We're all out, Dan. So if there's anything
else, okay. So I've got a few more. Okay. Vengeful female cyborgs have annoying laughs. When you don't have enough makeup budget for prosthetic contact lenses, consider ping pong balls.
Oh, shit. The girl with the frog look.
That was perfect.
And, of course, panty shots on teenage girls in anime? Fan service. Panty shots on female robots in tokusatsu? Fan castration.
Huh. Ooh.
Okay, and let's go on to the drinking game. I think I'm going to fall short on the drinking game this time around, but let's start it out. Andrea?
Okay, take a drink every time someone is addressed by their title, Miss Borg.
Hmm. Take a drink every time somebody gets electric whipped.
Sarcastic comments making fun of something that appears in the movie too many times. Take a drink every time someone says the name of their attack before they do it.
Cross that one off my list.
Every time you find yourself wishing for the nuanced storytelling of the Power Rangers, take a drink.
Okay, thank you to Kevin for this one. Take a drink every time someone does something self-destructive.
Every time two or more men in tan trench coats show up.
Jeez, Kevin focuses on such weird details of
Kudos.
These movies. What the hell?
Wasn't standing out. You were an annoying distractor. There they are again, guys in tan trench coats. They're everywhere.
Kevin, you're the one who noticed in, what was our Beatles musical? Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. You're the one that noticed, take a drink every time you see a cow. I'm like, what? You have such a weird eye for detail.
Pepperland was overrun with cows in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
Go on.
Whenever Diamond gets attacked one at a time, take a drink.
Every time men's nipples are used for a punchline, take a drink.
I only have one more, but mine is kind of an overarching. It sums up the entire film.
You want to save it?
No.
Go ahead.
Because then you can all cross this off your list if you have it.
Okay.
Take a drink each time you say to yourself, "Wow, this film just got weirder."
My God, that's blood alcohol poisoning.
Okay, my last one is, let me read my notes here. Okay, anytime someone says a monster's full name, take a drink. Take two if the monster says its own full name.
Oh, my God.
Good.
Yes, diarrhea monster.
Good call.
Oh, my God. Every time body parts get weird, take a drink.
Oh, boy.
Every time Yutaka's helmet makes you nostalgic for that gooseneck desk lamp you had in college, take a drink.
That must have been so cool in the 1970s.
Yeah,
pulled that down off his helmet. It must have been so badass. Oh.
Yeah, I can imagine there was a big market for those things. I can imagine kids running around with that thing.
Mm-hmm. I refuse to understand helmet and badass in the same sentence.
Speaking of that helmet, every time Diamond yells into that damn microphone in his helmet, take a drink.
Oh, boy.
You bet.
Kevin?
I'm out.
Okay.
And I'm out. It's down to you and Hawk.
Okay, I've got one more. Every time you realize Yutaka is riding into battle, straddling his brother, take a drink.
I have a few more, so I'm going to go for a little
go
bit.
For it, go for it.
Every time Miss Borg hates on men, take a drink.
Oh, boy.
Whenever Miss Borg gets the BDSM treatment, take a drink.
Oh.
Whenever Diamond loses his shit, take a drink.
That's alcohol poisoning, yeah. Too. You'll never make it through the first half, Hawk.
Whenever you see Karate Robo Misogyny, take a drink.
Nice. That was my band in high school.
Okay, and that's it, right, Hawk?
No, one more.
One more.
Hawk has 12 more. Oh.
Every time something comes out of boobs that shouldn't, take a drink.
Thank you, Hawk.
I think we had, like, between what we learned and the drinking game, we had, like, about 4 or 5 different ones about the tits.
Yeah. What are the odds of that happening?
It's all over the film. The film is almost at one point, missiles come out of boobs.
Yeah, that
missiles come out of boobs. Dragons come out of boobs.
Yeah, those were some of the many times that my boyfriend turned to look at me and said, "I'm going to need to talk to Hawk when I see him."
Okay, so that's it for Karate Robo Zaborgar, and thank God. Actually, you know what? I'll say it again. I thought it was worthwhile. I thought it was fun. It's probably worth checking out if you haven't already. So it's time to, I think, set up for our next film. And Andrea.
Yay.
Your turn.
For revenge, because my ovaries and my womanhood were so wounded by this picture. I needed something that goes back to traditional womanhood, you know, where women are supportive and fairly pretty scientists who make coffee, and they're supportive of the menfolk around them. Oh, and because I wanted a movie with doofy monsters, our next episode is my choice, the 1957 classic Roger Corman film, Attack of the Crab Monsters.
This boy.
Starring the late, great Russell Johnson in a pivotal role and some very doofy monsters. And it is a brisk 62 minutes long. None of this 2 hour nonsense. Give us just over an hour. You will get a movie about doofy crab monsters.
Should I bring the old bay?
Oh,
it's crab.
You bring the Obey, I'll bring the hammers.
Oh, okay.
You know, I haven't seen this film seriously for decades, but I'll need to research this because I haven't checked it out. But I do believe this is the prototypical example of the situation where they came up with the poster first and then made the movie.
I mean, honestly, I think that it might have been there used to be a site up that was really cool, and then it's been taken down over the years. But there was a site up on the internet, and it was one of these, you know, doofiest movie monsters of all time. And it just had pictures of all these very ridiculous looking, you know, whatever, Tabanga, you know, the tree creature, and, you know, the carpet monster and the giant shrews and whatever else. And yeah, you look up Attack of the Crab Monsters on IMDb, you'll see the poster, and they're just, you know, they're like giant crabs. Okay, you kind of know what a giant crab looks like, but their faces and their big, droopy, human-looking eyes are just really weird. And then, of course, when you hear the giant crab monsters talking, it gets even more exciting. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get out of here. Before we do, let me just point out you can find us over at mightymoviepodcast.com, also over at iTunes under Mighty Movie Podcast. You can find us over also at HuffingtonPost.com, CineFantasticOnline.com, ChronicRift.com.
Leave off the best one again?
Which was?
Mean templeofbad.com.
Oh, yes, templeofbad.com. I forgot
about that.
You
always leave that off the list.
That's a thing, isn't it? Yes.
Yes.
It is at templeofbad.com. Easiest way to find us. And before we go, let me just also point out, if you want to write us about the show, you can send the email to Dan at mightymoviepodcast.com. I'll be right there for you. And, okay, so that's the show. Andrea Lipinski, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Kevin Lauderdale, thank you.
Yeah, baby. Tomahawk missile jubblies. How did I miss those?
You must have worked hours on that one.
Oh, my God.
Orenthal Hawkins, thank you.
and I'm sorry, it's all my fault.
It was a good call in this case, so thank you for that. And I'm Dan Persons. I'm Dan Persons. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and until next time, may a bad film be the worst thing to happen to you.
I wonder if God was sleeping.